Thank you. WRCT Pittsburgh. No one is as excited about flaming cheese as we are.
There's a super interesting article that many of you sent me about who is likely to live longer from today, Joe Biden or Donald Trump, bearing in mind that Joe Biden is older than Donald Trump. This question relates to so much of the discussion around fitness for office, Trump's glitches, Joe Biden looking unstable and frail and sometimes falling, and all of it. And one of the things that sometimes is genuinely difficult to talk about is, there, while we don't ever know exactly when someone's going to die, there is an entire industry called actuaries that are paid to calculate when are you likely to die on average statistically. And one of the questions, of course, is age. Someone who's 80 today is more likely to die sooner than someone who is 10 today, all else being equal. But it also takes into consideration lifestyle factors. It takes into consideration underlying illness. It takes into consideration diet and weight and so many other things. And there's a very interesting new article on The Messenger. Which president is healthier? Data show Biden will likely outlive Trump. I don't really care about this from a gossipy perspective. What's interesting about this is that there are so many on the right who have started to insist Joe Biden's never going to survive a second term. Now, when you look at the actuarial data and you consider the facts about Trump and Biden, what actuarial data finds is that from today, it is likely that Joe Biden will live longer than Donald Trump. Despite only a 3-year age gap between Biden and Trump, recent polling shows voters treating the two men's age differently. This we know. The article is quite interesting. I encourage you to check it out. Biden has disclosed he takes prescription drugs to treat common conditions, including allergies, high cholesterol, and gastroesophageal reflux. Polls show that voters are not treating the slim difference in age the same way. Washington Post ABC News poll found that 32% of voters think Biden has the mental sharpness it takes to be president, compared to 54% for Trump. Yet, and this is where it gets interesting, available medical information suggests the two men are more similar health-wise than different. A recent report published in 2020 by the International Council on Active Aging found that while both Biden and Trump have a higher than average probability of surviving another term in office, Biden's probability is 95% versus Trump at 90. The report attributes this to Biden's nearly perfect health profile for a man his age. It also found that while both Biden and Trump are likely to be part of a subgroup known as superagers, those who maintain mental and physical functioning and live longer than the average person at their age, Biden is expected to outlive Trump. The report represents the first time medical records and personal attributes of presidential candidates have been scientifically analyzed by scientists and physicians. It draws in part on annual medical disclosures released by both men during times at the White House. So this really is interesting. You're comparing the health of Biden and Trump. And what this finds essentially is that there's a lot of commonalities here, but there are some important differences, including Trump's obesity and diet. This is a very, very big deal. When you look at lifestyle factors, Trump is obese and Joe Biden is not. And this is something that has a significant impact on life expectancy. They're both older folks. Biden is 80 and Trump's a couple years shy of 80. But Biden is quite thin and is active, rides a bike, goes to the beach, etc. Yes, Trump golfs. He rides a golf cart between shots and is very overweight. In fact, obese, according to BMI, which is not a perfect indicator, but at least it gives us an idea. That's a major difference between the two, which affects life expectancy. And so my interest in this is less about another Trump's fat story, which are really not very interesting, but it's there is an incorrect assumption that statistically it's more likely Trump will live until January of 2029, the end of the next term, than it is that Joe Biden will live until January 2029. Statistically, while they are both likely to survive, it is actually more likely that Joe Biden does. Now, is this a reason to vote one way or the other? Not for me. If either died in office, I would be more worried about what Trump would do while alive than what Biden would do while alive. And I would be more worried about what Trump's vice president would do if they became president if Trump died than my concern about what Biden's vice president, presumably Kamala Harris, would do as president if Joe Biden were to die. So there's the facts. And then there's also the fact that regardless, I'd still vote for Biden over Trump if those were the options. Disgraced and dishonest, indicted Republican Congressman George Santos has now compared himself to Rosa Parks in a completely mentally ill interview. We're going to look at a clip of this. This guy is challenging Trump for egocentric narcissism. He really is. He's really close to Trump in that sense. Let's listen to what George Santos had to say.
They come for me, I go right back for them, because I think for far too long they've gotten away with getting along to get along. So no, it's not going to stay that way anymore. I'm going to call them out. You want to call me a liar? I'll call you a sellout. I mean, Mitt Romney, the man goes to the State of the Union of the United States wearing a Ukraine lapel pin, tells me, a Latino gay man, that I shouldn't sit in the front, that I should be in the back. Well, guess what? Rosa Parks didn't sit in the back, and neither am I going to sit in the back.
Wow. Well, Rosa Parks, I know this is crazy. Rosa Parks was trending on Twitter after this. Think of the contrast between George Santos and Rosa Parks. Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat to a white passenger on a bus in 1955 under legal segregation that deprioritized and discriminated against black folks in the United States. George Santos lied about his job and claimed to have jobs he didn't have. Wow, what a contrast. Rosa Parks was arrested for violating unfair segregation laws as a form of peaceful protest, which you can argue was part of the catalyst that led to the civil rights movement. George Santos lied about being good at volleyball in college. Okay, that's the contrast between these two. Rosa Parks inspired millions to join the struggle for racial equality and justice. George Santos has been charged with 13 criminal counts of fraud and money laundering. This is a form of egocentrical narcissism that really is unique in humans. And Trump seems to have caught a bit of it. And George Santos seems to have caught a bit of it. And it really reminds me of the fact that this guy has no business being a member of the House. And I worry, and many of you have written to me about this and said, David, what happened with Santos? It's like he lied about everything. He's under criminal indictment. And yet it seems like he's just going to be able to serve out his entire term. This is absolutely crazy. Has the media forgotten about him? As I told you just a month or so into George Santos's tenure, unless you have new lies constantly to keep his name in the news, it is going to go away. And then the question is, do the voters in his district forget? And maybe he ends up getting himself reelected. He filed for reelection for 2024. Or is this guy going to get kicked out after just one term? My belief right now, even though George Santos's name is not in the news to the degree that it used to be, is that he's going to get kicked out, that he's going to lose reelection. But we have to ensure that there's a viable candidate to run against him. It can't just be like joke candidacies in George Santos, because that's how he will end up getting reelected. But I recently saw his approval rating within his district. I don't remember what it was. It's very low. I don't want to necessarily say single digits, but it might be in the like the teens. Very low. I don't see a path to his reelection unless no one really runs and it's all just kooky nobodies that aren't running really real campaigns, and Santos, and he just sort of ends up getting reelected because no one pays attention. Let's make sure that that doesn't actually happen. Leave a comment. If you had to guess right now, does George Santos get the boot or does George Santos get reelected in November of 2024? Rosa Parks, give me a break. The David Pakman Show continues to be primarily funded by our audience. The great thing about that is no one person can fire me. The bad thing about that is you can be part of firing me if you don't like what's going on the show. But in all seriousness, you can sign up at joinpakman.com, which is the best thing to do, quite frankly. We keep all but 2% of every membership payment. We just pay 2% to swipe credit cards. And you get the bonus show. You get the commercial-free audio and video streams. All of those great things. Sign up at joinpakman.com. No shortage of coupon codes, including indicted again. I did everything right and they indicted me. Okay. Indicted again is a great, great coupon code. Let's hear from our viewers and our listeners. We love doing this on Friday. It's a good way to send us into the weekend, either incredibly inspired or horribly depressed, depending on how calls go. We're going to start today with Chris from Texas. You can join at davidpakman.com/discord.
Hey, David, can you hear me?
Chris, welcome.
Welcome back. All right.
Thank you. It's so great to be on your program today.
What'd you say?
Nothing. I'm kidding. Go ahead, Chris.
All right. My first question is, I guess, as an African-American guy, I'm generally a progressive person. However, I feel like with progressives, we need to honestly try to have better inroads with the African-American community, especially like I remember seeing the results in like the Philadelphia mayor race and the New York City mayor race. How do you think we can like try to build inroads with the African-American community?
Well, I think first we want to be really clear about the context. Nationally, Black folks are one of the most, I believe, the most Democratic voting bloc that there is, followed closely by Jewish Americans. So by voting numbers specifically, we are seeing actually incredible unity between what is the left in the United States, which for better or worse runs through the Democratic Party to some degree, and Black Americans. That piece you acknowledge, right?
Yeah, I acknowledge that. But I guess one of my big things I was just wondering is like, for example, like I remember also in 2020, like one of the big reasons why Joe Biden was able to win the primaries against versus Bernie Sanders was the African-American vote.
Yeah, I don't have those numbers in front of me. Is there a particular state? I mean, listen, certainly in 2020 in South Carolina, where Joe Biden, you could argue, turned a corner, did a 180 or whatever. It certainly was thanks to the support not only of African-American Congressman Clyburn, but also the Black vote in South Carolina. Like, that's absolutely true. I think the Bernie and Black folks question, I just don't have numbers in front of me to be able to intelligently weigh in super specifically. But listen, if what you're saying generally is, even though the Democratic Party sees great support from Black folks, it would be great for the more progressive wing to continue doing outreach. I'm with you 100%.
Yeah, but I guess one thing is like, how do you think we can probably do that? I mean, I don't necessarily want to do it via religious things, but I would think like we probably should try to advocate for more like better things such as like healthcare and like wages and student loan debt, which are all racially based.
Well, it sounds like you're alluding to something that is true, which is that there is a significant amount of religiosity among Black Americans. And to the extent that Biden is, famously Catholic and speaks about his religion, and some more progressive Democrats like Bernie Sanders maybe do not, maybe you're saying there might be some opportunity there.
Yeah, but I don't necessarily want to rely on religion.
Neither do I. No, listen, I don't have a playbook that I can outline, but you're definitely thinking about this issue in the right way. And I think it's an important issue to be thinking about. I don't have a prescription right here and now that I could give.
Yeah, I understand. All right. Thanks for the talk, David.
Chris, thank you. Thank you so much for having me today. There is Chris. Let's go next to Hannah from Georgia. Hannah from Georgia, welcome to the David Pakman Show. What's on your mind today?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi. So, I did have two questions.
Okay.
One was if Trump or especially DeSantis were to be president, do you think they'd be able to use like federal powers to overstep states where we are seeing them implement some kind of protections, like trans safe states, protecting abortion rights, and like how that I forget which state it was, but the governor used his powers to basically guarantee increased funding for schools for the next 400 years. Do you think like they'd be able to overstep those kind of protections?
Sadly, in some areas they would. There are a bunch of state-based institutions and programs that depend heavily on federal funding and federal rules. And I think that unfortunately, because they're using this as a scapegoat, I think school athletics, particularly at the college level, may be affected by anti-trans decrees from a potential President Trump or President DeSantis. So I think that's the bad news, Hannah. I think the good news is that in a lot of areas, they're either going to be unable legally, or it will just be seen as a huge overreach for a President Trump or President DeSantis to try to override states with federal legislation. But I think we shouldn't be naive. We should understand the risks with the Supreme Court if Trump or DeSantis win. And we should understand that at least in some areas, including potentially with athletics and in some other ways, particularly medical programs that depend on federal funding, educational programs, they may be able to, from the federal level, override some of the great protections and programs that states are putting into place. So it's yet another reason why we need to make sure neither of those lunatics becomes president.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I also had another question if you have time.
Sure, go ahead.
So I'm non-binary. I like was born female, but I basically had the privilege of being able to live a non-binary / like trans existence for a lot of my life. And I didn't realize it until later in life and hearing other people's stories, because I was always playing co-ed sports where I was one, if not two, of the females on the team, stuff like that. And like, I feel like I had that privilege because I was born female and more, you know, lean more towards masculine. But I feel like a lot of the politics around trans kids in sports is like so focused on trans women.
Yes.
Because they just like feel like they have to make, you know, cis women look weak and like they're going to be, you know, victims of trans women, when like no one ever blinked an eye my entire life of me playing with guys. And I'm like 5 feet tall.
I've talked about this before. The issue of trans sports is really only an issue of trans women in women's sports. As you're pointing out, nobody's concerned with the other direction. And much of that has to do with if muscle mass and having gone through male puberty confers an advantage, the quote worst that will happen from people born biologically female playing in men's leagues is they might just not do well. So it's not, I think what you're saying, Hannah, is it's not seen as a threat that lends itself to scapegoating in the way that trans women in women's sports does. Do I understand what you're saying correctly?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you're 100% right. And we've talked about this. And I would even go further. This is only an issue with regard to trans women in women's sports in some sports, not in every sport. Now, that being said, I do think that progressives should engage with the facts about what advantages are or aren't conferred in any particular sport. If I don't pretend to be an expert on this, and I know every time I bring this up, someone writes to me and goes, David, you're lending credibility. I'm not lending credibility to anything. All I'm saying is this should be explored as empirically as possible. And just because we're not going to discriminate against trans and non-binary people under the law, and because we're not going to mistreat people, and people should be allowed to use whatever bathroom they want, all of that can be true. And also, if it's true that we have things to figure out with regard to trans women and women's sports, progressives should embrace figuring it out with all the facts rather than just pretending there's nothing to figure out. That's my preference.
Yeah, definitely. And also, I know it's anecdotal, but a common comment that I got growing up was like, because I grew up as a cisgender woman, like I when I was good at sports, when I was dominating, playing, whether it was with male or female, you know, competitors, it was always like, if I was winning against women, it was that I was built like a man, and that's why I was winning. And if I was winning with the guys, it was that, well, she's different from other women.
Well, like they were taking it easy on you or something?
I see what you're saying.
Okay. Was there also a she's doing well because the guys are taking it easy on her?
Yeah, of course. And then also if the guys like retaliated because their masculinity was hurt.
Yep.
Then like I just like inherently felt the need to just not give them the reaction and like the satisfaction of hurting me, even though I did get hurt a lot.
Interesting. Well, listen, Hannah, I appreciate the call. All points well made, and hope to hear from you again.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right. There is Hannah from Georgia. Let's go to Ramiro from Indiana. Welcome to the program, Ramiro. What's going on today? Ramiro, please accept my invitation. Ramiro, you're on the air. Yes, welcome.
Hey, I had a quick question. Your finance channel, are you going to do anything with that in the future? Or
you know, I don't know. Here's what's going on, Ramiro. One of the things that I like to do is I like to test things out and see what the market is. And that applies to the finance channel, which I think has 12 or 15,000 subscribers. This applies to the Spanish channel, which I think has 4,000 subscribers. But as we approach another election season, it's important to make sure I'm not doing too much and spreading myself too thin. So we have paused the finance channel and will be pausing the Spanish channel. Why? I just don't think they're successful enough to justify continuing to pour time, energy, and resources into them. When our main channel is growing by 40 or 50,000 subscribers a month and is really the bread and butter where we're building an audience and doing all those things, I want to make sure I can focus on the areas where we're going to do the most. And so I'm just not sure whether we overstated maybe what the markets might be for that sort of content. So I don't know what we're going to do with it. I do think we're pausing into the election season.
Okay. I understand. I think it's pretty invaluable content. I've certainly been a subscriber since day one. So
I really appreciate that. Curious. And you know, one of the things is there are so many things that we can do, like just to give you an idea of what we have on our plate. There's the David Pakman show with all of the things that go with that, the guests, the website, YouTube, TikTok, Threads, all that stuff. We've got live events that people want me to do. Speakers Bureau wants to talk to me about getting me involved in more public speaking, not like live shows, but public speaking. We've got the children's book and now the possibility of a series,
which I ordered.
I appreciate that. I'm starting to work on an adult book, which is still very far off. So I'm not, you know, not even much to say about that. Spanish channel, finance channel. We've got now we're part of the TikTok creativity program beta. We're publishing to Snapchat. People want me to blurb their book. It's crazy. Now, I'm not saying this to you, Ramiro, so that you feel bad for me. It's amazing to have all these opportunities. But the important thing is I can't possibly do all of them. So we just have to kind of pick and choose, you know?
Yeah, I just didn't see any like announcement regarding that. So I was just curious. So if it's on pause and down the road we get something, that'd be awesome. And if not, I understand.
I love it. Ramiro, thank you so much for the inquiry.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye.
All right. There goes Ramiro from Indiana. Great to hear from him. Let's go to Bray from Springfield. Bray from Springfield. Welcome. Springfield, Missouri, I should say. Bray, welcome.
Hi, David. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hi. So you actually featured my email a few days ago about potential kids book ban. So I thought that was pretty cool. That was the first time I ever reached out to you guys. I thought it was kind of cool.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Cool. So something I've noticed with Trump is that obviously he has a humongous ego. And I think no matter what happens, he'll just continue to run for president for literally the rest of his life. So I was wondering what your thoughts are about this is like for progressives, like best case scenario. So like somebody else wins the primary and then Trump runs as a third party,
right?
And like splits the vote. Cause I imagine even if he does lose the primary, which is unlikely, he'll be like, oh, it was stolen for me.
Of course.
The primary was stolen. So what do you think about that?
I think that you are right that Trump's ego is always going, he's never just going to say, hey, you know what? They beat me fair and square. Either DeSanctimonious beat me fair and square, or Biden beat me fair and square, or the Justice Department got me. I'm guilty. You know, I did it. They got me. Trump's ego will never let him do that. You're getting to what I believe is really a dream scenario from the standpoint of guaranteeing that neither DeSantis nor Trump become president. I think either of those scenarios is extraordinarily dangerous to the United States and the world. I don't think Trump nor DeSantis should be president. The way to essentially all but guarantee it is indeed that Trump loses the primary but runs third party. If Trump can pull just 5 or 10% of the vote in these key swing states, he's mostly going to pull from Republicans who would otherwise be voting for DeSantis, and it could guarantee one of the biggest Democratic presidential wins in the United States in decades. That's my dream scenario. I don't think it's the most likely one because, as you point out, Bray, Trump seems to have a basically unobstructed path to the nomination. But if it happened, it would be an absolutely fantastic scenario.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think the likely situation is we get the same ticket we had in 2020 on the presidential ballot.
You mean the same matchup in terms of Biden versus Trump?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, just yeah. And Trump with some other. I mean, it would be a different ticket in the sense that Trump would have some other VP.
Oh, yeah. I think it's weird how he just abandoned his vice president like that. And
it's not just abandoned.
Really a red flag.
It's, yeah, it's actively attacked.
Red flag to anybody.
Actively attacked, yeah. His vice president. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that's insane. You
it's
know?
Bonkers stuff. It's
his,
really
his supporters were calling for him to be hung. That's insane. And I think it's crazy how that's not a red flag for so many of these supporters of his. But
I know. I mean, you know, Bray, here's where I'll leave it. Think back to November of 2016, the day after Trump was elected. If anyone had said 4 years from now, 4 years and 2 months from now, the people who voted for Trump Pence, some of them will be looking for Pence at the Capitol after breaking in and trying to hang him. None of us would have believed that. But that's exactly what happened.
Yeah,
it's insane.
Maybe Rosie O'Donnell would have believed that.
Right. All right, Bray, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, we're going to take the quickest of breaks and then stick with our phone lines. If you'd like to join the discussion, it's all on Discord, davidpakman.com/Discord. Let's go back to Discord and hear from some more people at davidpakman.com/Discord. Incredibly important calls today of all kinds. Let's go to Justin from Georgia. Justin from Georgia, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Oh, hello.
Hi.
For having me. I was actually curious if you've heard of Cornel West's kind of take on Ukraine, where he's saying that NATO provoked it in some way. And I think it's kind of a strange theme of presidential candidates running on misinformation with our kind of making stuff up about vaccines.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not as bad as like a Trump or DeSantis, but it's still definitely scary that there's people running that claim to be on the left that are running on just like lies and misinformation.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting about you bringing this up this week, we did a poll. I'm going to address that more specifically in a moment. This week, we did a poll on the David Pakman community tab on the YouTube channel. And initially, I forget the initial number, but basically based on the poll results right now, 13% of my audience says that they align most closely with the political ideology of Cornel West. Now, I actually, these numbers have changed over the last 24 hours, I think because the fact that we were doing this poll became popularized. West and Marianne Williamson were much lower yesterday. I think some of their supporters have come in and boosted it up. But regardless, one of the really interesting things is that 13% of those who voted say they align most closely with Cornel West, 13% with Marianne Williamson. If you look at the comments, many people say, while they align most closely with those people, they're not actually going to be voting for them because there are specific issues that for them are sort of like uniquely disqualifying. It's kind of like with Bobby Kennedy Jr. There's lots of people who go, hey, I'm with him on a lot of this stuff. But when he said vaccines cause autism, that's uniquely disqualifying. So I'm going to end up voting for someone else. For me, I've said before, I'm not part of the revolutionary Leninist left that often implicitly or explicitly defends Putin or defends Maduro Chavez or Castro or whatever. That's not the part of the left that I'm on. So for me, the Cornel West thing isn't super interesting. He was also originally running on the People's Party, which had no ballot access. Then somebody told him like, hey, by the way, you know, you quite literally can't win. And then he's like, oh, I guess I'll run Green Party. Now I don't even know. Is he running on both? Is he running on one? For me, the candidacy is a mess, and the blame NATO and Ukraine for Russia invading is also a mess. So it's not for me, but I still think it's a good thing to have more choices and people are going to make their choices.
I agree. And I think I'm very disappointed in Biden domestically, but I do think he's handling international affairs well.
Mm.
And I wish there was someone else who had like more, I guess, worker centric, willing to stand up or like, for example, with the Supreme Court. I know there's the Republicans have the House and that kind of prevents any kind of impeachment. But the fact that there's nothing that can be done when Clarence Thomas is just openly taking bribes.
Yeah.
That's unfortunate, but the president has all the power in international affairs. Like, that's how it is. So.
I would love to have a president that's stronger on labor than Biden, for sure. I'm with you on that 100%.
I'm glad. Thanks so much for having my question.
What are you eating, Justin?
Yeah, I just made it before you had me on.
What did you make?
It's just Honey Nut Cheerios.
You made Honey Nut. In other words, you put them in a bowl with milk.
Yeah, I didn't really make it.
Got fair. Fair. All right, Justin, we're going to leave you to it, okay?
Thanks for having me.
All right. Justin from Georgia, really elbow deep in a bowl of cereal there. Why don't we go next to Grant from Ohio? Grant, welcome to the David Pakman Show. What is on your mind today?
David, I've just been seeing such an increase in transphobia and really just anti-pride in general. And the takes have been getting wackier and wackier each passing day. I just saw that Michael Knowles said that condoms are gay on his program because they don't lead to the ultimate consequences of having sex, which is pregnancy.
And yeah, that was flagged for me by a couple people. Now here, I'm going to ask you honestly, Grant, as someone, do you watch Michael Knowles every once in a while? Do you watch regularly?
I don't. I just saw a clip on it on TY. I think it was TYT. They did.
Oh, okay. So maybe you're not the right person to weigh in on this, but is your instinct that Knowles is genuine when he says stuff like that, or is he just being deliberately provocative and saying something he knows is very stupid?
You know, I think it's a little bit of the provocative stuff because there was the wave of kind of Milo. He was kind of that provocateur back 2016, 2015, and then he got canceled and all this other stuff, and he's gone wackier and wackier. So
yep.
I think it's them grifting a little. I mean, all these people are grifters, obviously, but they're grifting into this avenue. And I just saw the other day that Iowa DeSantis-based pamphlet. I think it was a pamphlet, Iowa GOP back, but they said they were using this in a derogatory way where it's saying Trump supports the gay movement. And I'm just
Let me explain that, Grant, to the audience, for people who didn't see it. Some Republican organization, I don't remember if it was the Iowa Republican Party or who it was, they put out a mailer that basically was acting like Trump did great things by supporting gay rights. It was sort of like a reverse compliment. The idea being, if we compliment Trump for being great on gay rights, homophobic Republicans might go, oh, whoa, I don't want to support Trump. That's what Grant's referring to.
Exactly. And so I'm just wondering your insight on how we've gotten to this point, because I remember I was in high school at the time when the Supreme Court certified or legalized gay marriage.
Right.
And then kind of the talking point was, okay, now we go into trans issues. And I feel like we were making progress then, but now it seems like we're just so far back, and I don't know if it's with like the schools and kids stuff and drug
There's
things,
a lot behind it. But yeah, you know, on the Monday show, we interviewed Rosie O'Donnell, and she talked exactly about this issue, which is, it's not a little bit of regression that we've seen on LGBT rights. It's actually significant since Trump became president. There's a whole bunch of reasons for it. It includes, number one, a lot of these folks already felt this way, but Trump made them feel more willing to say it out loud. Number two, that a lot of money is still raised on these social issues. Number three, that having abandoned policy altogether, what is increasingly uniting the right is these culture war issues. There's a whole bunch of reasons, but you're 100% correct in your observation.
Yeah, and I just feel like I agree with you. And then the monetization from media outlets and like the grift of attaching themselves to these issues has just become such a great way to make money for these folks, and hatred sells. And so it's concerning. And I'm just wondering what we do from a progressive standpoint to kind of obviously pointing it out and exposing these morons is one way, but it's like I live in Ohio right now, and we're having the August election for the Ohio for our constitution to have the majority vote to be 60 for anything to be passed.
Yes,
and we're trying to pass abortion, and we're trying to pass the right to have an abortion in November. And it's just, I personally think we have a chance for it to pass, because I think it's a lot more popular than people make it seem to be.
Scary. Most urgently, what we do is we prevent Trump or DeSantis from being the next president and potentially getting multiple Supreme Court picks. That's highly, highly urgent.
Right.
All right, Grant from Ohio, thank you for the call.
Thank you.
All right, there goes Grant. Very, very important stuff. Let's go next to Tamisha from New York City. Tamisha, welcome to the program. Great to have you back.
Hello.
Hello.
All right, I'm trying to hear you. The volume is not that great.
Oh, no.
But I can hear you a little bit.
Okay, good.
As long as you can hear me.
We can hear you beautifully.
All right, well, I understand that everybody doesn't pay attention to politics the same way, and everybody's not as in tune as, like, myself or you.
Sure.
But I find it very troubling that people vote based on very, very, very simplistic reasons.
Well, yeah.
Like, do you see that happening a lot?
Of course. And often it's misunderstandings. That's the really depressing part. One thing that wouldn't be great would be voting for really simplistic reasons like, Trump's going to build a wall that Mexico is going to pay for. It's like, oh, you know, if you really want to deal with immigration, you've got to deal with visa overstayers. And what do we do with those who are already here? Right. So if that's one layer. The next layer goes, by the way, Trump's never building that damn wall, and there's no way Mexico is paying for it. So it's like there's a second layer, which is not only are a lot of these voting decisions overly simplistic, they're based on misunderstandings or things that people think could happen that obviously aren't going to happen, which I would argue is even worse.
Yes. And another example is that, under Trump, the economy was good and jobs were good. And then under Biden, we had inflation and we had this problem, we had that problem. So based on that, they're saying Trump is better than Biden.
Right.
And they don't understand that it's, first of all, Biden created more jobs than Trump. Trump outsourced jobs, even though he said he was bringing back jobs. And, you know, you try to get, you try to have these debates with people and it goes nowhere.
Yeah. Like, and like, even I would argue, Tamisha, also
people,
If we want to be intellectually honest, we should also say presidents only have a little to do with a lot of those things. I mean, the Trump economy was pretty damn good in those first couple of years, but it wasn't because of anything Trump did. It was the obvious continuation from the economic circumstances that existed under Obama. I'm not even praising Obama. I'm just saying that trajectory was there. COVID hit, disaster. Trump dealt with it worse than others would have. And so the problems became worse than they had to be. Now, as you point out, record job creation under Biden, inflation lowest in 27 months, all these different things. It also only has a little to do with Joe Biden. Inflation Reduction Act was a factor, monetary and fiscal policy, certainly. But a lot of this stuff is bigger than presidents anyway. So like you're pointing out, layer one, economy was good under Trump, bad under Biden. Layer two is that's not actually true. Layer three is it only has somewhat to do with who's president anyway.
Yeah. And it's those many layers that get lost on people.
100%.
And I have one other thing I wanted to ask you.
Sure.
Are you familiar with the BRICS alliance? And do you feel like it's a big threat? And I also am hearing about our dollar losing the head of currency in the
world.
Being
the reserve currency. Yeah. So second one, it's possible that the dollar will not be the reserve currency at some point in the future. For the time being, it is. So let's table that for now. When you say the BRICS alliance, do you mean BRIC, like Brazil, Russia, India? What's the C? Now I forget. Is it
China?
China. Yeah, of course. Is that what you mean by BRICS?
Yes. And Saudi Arabia is the S.
Oh, OK. Listen, alliances aren't objectively good or bad. It depends on who's in charge of those countries at the time. What are the purposes of the alliance? And do we believe that it would be potentially a bad thing for the United States or whoever? I think in a vacuum, it's hard to say. What I will say is when our adversaries coordinate, it's potentially bad for our interests. I think that that's hard to deny.
Yeah, because I'm hearing a lot of doom and gloom about this alliance and the currency. And it's like, I don't want to dismiss it, but I try to do more research, but it's hard to really get accurate information.
Of course, there are concerns and it's a topic to look into, but jumping to the sky is falling stuff doesn't really serve anybody well.
Yeah, I agree with that sentiment.
Well, Tamisha, you've really said it all. Any arguments with people in the barbershop lately?
Not the barbershop, but I don't understand how I'm living in New York City and I find so many Trump supporters. It's
I know.
Just amazing.
I never see them, I'll be honest. Now, every once in a while at a bar or something.
I think I live because I've looked in the Bronx, the specific areas that are red, I actually tend to live in.
Okay. That's the answer.
The crazy thing is that I did go to Atlanta just last week and almost everybody there are anti-Trumpers.
Right.
Came in contact with.
Well, I'm sure that was a nice reprieve.
Yes.
All right. Thank you for the call. Always great to hear from you.
Thank you. Have a good one.
All right. There it goes to Misha in New York City. That's going to do it for today. Let's go to a break. We'll take calls again. So appreciate everybody who called in today. All right. Time for Friday feedback. We heard about so many different things from people over the last week, and I want to review some of them. Remember, you can always email info@davidpakman.com if you'd like to submit some kind of criticism or praise or question or commentary. Also, we'll sometimes pick things from YouTube comments or replies on Twitter or more recently Threads, where you can find me at david.pakman. Let's jump right into it. This is a user who goes by the name User. And says, you are a liar, David, but it's the wrong liar. It's L-I-E-R, someone who lies down, I guess. And you know what? It is true. At the end of a long day, reading all of the hate mail that I get, and seeing messages like this, I lie down and I go to sleep. And it is true, I am a liar, this type of liar anyway. So really the height of discourse and commentary. Here's another one. Ewenchen says, you're American Taliban. Now, it's the wrong you're, because what they want to say is you are American Taliban. Me, I, David Pakman, I am the American Taliban because of something I said. But instead, what they, because they use the wrong you're, they end up meaning my American Taliban. There's an American Taliban that I have. Y-O-U-R possessive. So, folks, commas can make all the difference. Commas can save lives. And apostrophes apparently can as well. Okay. Hermes or Hermes says, I am a conservative leaning libertarian and I like your show. I appreciate that. You know, one of the things that it doesn't bring tears to my eyes, I'd be lying if I said it brings tears to my eyes, but one of the things that is a source of enjoyment is that even though much of the American right wing has been taken over by the Magopotamians, Magadonians, Magats, this extreme part of the Republican Party, there are still Mitt Romney Republicans and conservative leaning libertarians and others who will write to me and they'll say, David, you know, I don't agree with all the policy that you espouse, but it's very obvious that you're putting out content in good faith, that you're just telling it like it is, and you're using the best facts you have to make your cases. You're not dishonest on purpose. You might get something wrong, and then I make an effort to correct it. And these are folks I can just talk to. You know, this is one of the things I spoke about when I was on the Lex Fridman program. It's gotten where a lot of people in the United States are uncomfortable disagreeing about politics. It gets tense if it turns out we disagree about something. And part of the reason that it gets tense is that when someone like a MAGAT disagrees with you, it very often gets really ugly. There are plenty of conservative leaning libertarians and other, you know, nominal right wingers where it's like, oh, we have a different view about what the tax rate should be and how welfare programs should be organized and maybe to what degree we should be spending on certain programs. But we basically agree about the facts, the basic facts. We basically agree about making the best environment possible in which we would raise children. We basically agree about fundamental basics of moral code. We just have some policy disagreements, and then that's fine. And then we can go and we can play golf together or do curling or play badminton or what, all things I don't do, by the way, but maybe others do. This has sort of become a lost thing because of the radicalization of much of the right in the United States. Snow commented on YouTube, at least in the leaked audio, Trump admitted he was not the president anymore. Yeah, this is a clever comment. We've had a bunch of these instances where we'll realize, oh, when Trump says he's running to replace Biden, he's in a way acknowledging he lost, Biden won. And if Trump is running again, clearly he didn't win last time because you can't win three times or whatever. Yeah, yes and no, because Trump would argue I won, but I didn't serve, so I still can serve one more term. In the leaked audio, Trump very clearly says I'm no longer the president. And there is a degree to which it gives us pleasure that Trump is admitting that he knows he's not the president, whatever it is people might be saying behind the scenes. James Staru commented on YouTube. I like this. I saw a video of yours from like 10 years ago. What blew my mind was just how consistent you have been over the years. Aside from being slightly lower audio quality, that's true. It was like you were still doing the show how you do it today. You know, I like this, but I also think it's important to mention when you get new information, it's logical to change your opinion. So I'm not someone who subscribes to this idea that if you believed something once and then you believe something different, that you flip-flopped in a way that's worthy of criticism. When the facts change, we adjust. There are, of course, issues, including, you know, my commitment to supporting and protecting marginalized individuals, my general views about progressive taxation and healthcare for everybody and all these things. The facts haven't changed, or if they have, they've changed more in the direction of reinforcing my views, where, of course, I've been consistent. In addition to that, there are areas where sometimes the facts change, and so we revise our views. That makes sense. That should actually be celebrated rather than attacked. And you might remember John Kerry was hugely attacked for flip-flopping, as if simply changing your opinion is wrong. When the facts change or our understanding of something changes, it's logical to change our opinion, and that should actually be celebrated. Marie was not happy with what I said about Trumpists being cultists. Marie said to me, one of your videos popped up in my feed, and I'm curious as to why you called Trump a cult. Do you say this about Catholics too? Just curious. Well, it's very interesting. By mentioning Catholics, Marie seems to be saying Trumpism is a religion rather than a political movement, which is an interesting one. And there is a degree to which there is a cultish aspect to Catholicism, but I don't know what Catholicism has to do with whether MAGA is a cult. Marie goes on to say, as a Trump supporter, I supported many of his policies. And as you can see it from the current most corrupt Biden presented family is in the White House. Okay, so the grammar and spelling going off the rails. Marie continuing, Trump told you the truth on so many things about Biden, about China, and now we don't even have a border. Billions to Ukraine, 80,000 children disappeared at the border under Biden. We don't have a border anymore. I didn't know that. They love saying that. We don't have a border anymore, but I think we do still have one. And lastly, all the Trump supporters I know are good, down-to-earth men and women who love America, love God, and serve others. Sounds like you're the racist. Now, of course, it's the wrong you're. She says it sounds like Y-O-U-R, the racist. But what's interesting is, if I say MAGA is a cult and you call me racist, are you admitting that there's only white people who support Trump? Because I can't think of any other way in which saying MAGA is a cult would be racist unless MAGA is all one race. And we know at least on the margins there are some non-white people who support Trump. Kate wrote in about Chris Christie and says, I'm not a fan of Chris Christie, but he is the only Republican in the race who I think is a decent person. I also like that he brought up Hurricane Sandy. My family has a house at the Jersey Shore. We never liked him, but he did do a good job after Sandy. My house had to be completely redone. My grandparents' permanent residence is on the same street. They were displaced for 6 months and were given $2,000 a month for living costs. I appreciated Chris Christie's leadership with that. Yeah, listen, I don't think Chris Christie is the epitome of morality or anything like that, but he's so obviously the only marginally sane person running in this Republican primary. It's stark, the contrast with everybody else. Jonathan Long asks, is Parkman on the take from Big Pharma? No, I'm not. Thanks for checking. I know people who are against vaccines love to say, I must be getting paid by Big Pharma to say the things I do. I just look at randomized controlled trials and actual medical studies. I don't need any money from Big Pharma to figure out the truth about a lot of these issues. But thanks for checking. Rick Watson says Trump doesn't have to debate with anyone because he is for the American people. These other thug just want our money. Sorry, the truth hurts. And Suzanne responded to Rick, too much Kool-Aid. Yeah, this is a new one. Trump, of course, is laying the groundwork not to debate in the Republican primary. And he's saying it's, you know, I don't need to. I'm winning by so much. And Fox News is bad. All this different stuff. This one is Trump's for the American people and the others aren't. So he doesn't have to debate. Good for you, Rick. Good for you. Very, very interesting. And then lastly, from Lindsay. Lindsay says, I am a registered Republican, even though I vote blue. I will vote for Trump in the primaries because I think Biden can beat Trump more than I fear DeSantis will beat Biden. I think that's super interesting. This is something people have called in about. If indeed we believe the polling, which says Biden will do better against Trump than against DeSantis, shouldn't people on the left be registering as Republicans and voting for Trump in the primaries to make Trump the nominee because it is more likely that he will lose to Biden? This is not the type of strategy I encourage people to do because it is a little bit of a subterfuge. And I just don't know if it's the right thing for me to encourage. But needless to say, There are many people in our audience who have written to me about that, saying that that is what they are going to do. Consider it as an option that is available to you. We have such a great bonus show for you today. Sign up at joinpacman.com to get access to the bonus show.
Oh, the bonus show where you want to make money, but everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
Absolutely right. We're going to make money on today's bonus show. You can use the coupon code indicted again. You can use the coupon code indicated. You could use the coupon code 24 starts now. Any code you want to use is fine, but joinpacman.com is the one place to use it. We'll see you on the bonus show, or otherwise, have a good weekend. We'll be back Monday. Republicans held more hearings yesterday. These are hearings where Republicans are determined to show that the FBI has been weaponized by the left against the right. The first problem that Republicans had yesterday in making that case is that they had testimony from Christopher Wray. Christopher Wray is the director of the FBI. Christopher Wray is a Republican. Christopher Wray votes for Republicans, and Christopher Wray was the selection of Republican President Donald Trump to lead the FBI. And yet, this did not stop Republicans from making fools of themselves with all sorts of allegations. You're defending Hunter Biden. You're covering for the Bidens. You're targeting Republicans, none of which are based in any actual evidence. We're going to look at these clips. And the point that I really want to hit home here for you is that this is our money being spent. We talk about, you know, I pay taxes. I don't like my money being used for so many weapons. I don't like my money being used for wars. Fine, I agree. I also don't like my money used for political theater that goes nowhere, uncovers nothing. And it is this sort of thing. Now, our friend, Congressman Ted Lieu, a Democrat, he had a brilliant line of questioning. We're going to get to the Republican questioning in a moment, which was cuckoo. Ted Lieu had a brilliant line of questioning here that speaks for itself. Let's take a listen.
Trump advisor Roger Stone was convicted in a federal court, correct?
That's my recollection.
Trump donor Elliot Brady was convicted in a federal court, correct?
Also my recollection.
The attorney general at the time for those two convictions was Bill Barr. Which president nominated Bill Barr for attorney general?
President Trump.
Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, was convicted on two separate occasions in a federal court, correct?
I believe that's correct.
The attorney general at the time for Cohen's second conviction was Matthew Whitaker. Which president appointed Matthew Whitaker as acting attorney general?
President Trump.
Trump's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, was convicted in a federal court, correct?
Yes.
Trump's former deputy campaign manager, Mr. Gates, was convicted in a federal court, correct?
That's my recollection.
Trump's campaign foreign policy advisor, George Papadopoulos, was convicted in a federal court, correct?
True.
Yes, I think he pled guilty, yes.
The attorney general at the time of those three cases was Jeff Sessions. Which president nominated Jeff Sessions for attorney general?
President Trump.
You were the FBI director for all of those cases at the time. Which president nominated you?
President Trump.
Okay. What these facts show is we don't have a two-tiered system of justice. We have one Department of Justice that goes after criminals regardless of party ideology. All of these folks were convicted under the administrations of three separate Republican attorneys general. It is not the fault of the FBI that Donald Trump surrounded himself with criminals.
This is, of course, such an obvious point that I can't believe needs to be made. But the vast majority of those who were convicted under this supposedly weaponized FBI were convicted under the leadership of a Republican FBI director and Republican attorneys general. Now, this was like the best moment of this entire hearing. We then get to some of the cartoonish moments. Here is Republican Congressman Chip Roy trying to make the case that the FBI has behaved in a tyrannical way. And FBI Director Wray struggling to get a word in edgewise, but managing to explain why that's not the case.
Your job is to protect the American people from a tyrannical FBI storming the home of an American family.
I could not disagree more with your description of the FBI as tyrannical.
And I don't believe it's tyrannical that FBI agents were a part of storming a father's home in suburban Philadelphia.
I'm the gentleman.
Mr. Chairman.
I wish they would let witnesses answer questions.
Time of the gentleman's expired. The witness may respond, and then we'll move to our next witness.
Sir, respectfully, member. They did not storm his house. They came to his door. They knocked on his door and identified themselves. They asked him to exit. He did without incident.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Water temperatures off the coast of Florida are hitting some of the highest levels on record, creating a dire situation for the coral reefs.
We are in Phoenix, Arizona, talking about the scorching heat. Now, it's not just here in Arizona, but we're outside of Valleywise Hospital, where they're talking about influx in patients suffering from all kinds of heat-related illnesses. We're talking about heat stroke. We're talking about heat exhaustion, as well as third-degree burns.
Temperature records are continuing to be smashed across Asia, Europe, and the United States, where over 100 million people remained under extreme heat advisories. We'll go to Texas to speak with Jeff Goodell, Rolling Stone reporter, author of the new book, The Heat Will Kill You First, Life and Death on a Scorched Planet. Then, towards a new era for human rights, we are highlights from panel I moderated in Venice, Italy this weekend, marking the 75th anniversary of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. I spoke with Volker Türk, the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights.
Our position is very clear. I mean, cluster bombs should be prohibited.
We'll also hear from former Swedish Foreign Minister Margot Wallström on her opposition to cluster bombs and Sweden's historic 2014 decision to recognize the state of Palestine.
We made it clear that we had no interest in making sort of Israel our enemy. We wanted to continue to work with Israel for a two-state solution, which is the decision and the position of the European Union.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Suffocating heat is gripping three continents as the summer's record-breaking temperatures continue to scorch large swaths of the United States, Asia, and Europe. 100 million U.S. residents remained under extreme heat advisories with dangerous conditions forecast this week in the South, the Southwest, and South Florida. In Arizona, an unrelenting heat wave's on track to break the previous record of 18 straight days of 110 degrees plus highs in Phoenix. That's Fahrenheit. Some of the most at risk include people who work outdoors, like construction workers, as well as unhoused people.
I've been here for 12 years, and I haven't seen nothing like it. Sleep on some hot concrete, and my whole left side got third-degree burns on them. You know, so that's an eye opener.
Europe could record its hottest day ever on the Italian islands of Sicily and Sardinia. Over the weekend, Italian authorities issued an extreme health risk in 16 cities, including Rome and Florence. Italians flocked to lakes and seasides in an attempt to cool down.
This is not normal. I don't remember such intense heat, especially at this time of year.
In northern Syria, displaced people describe the conditions at camps as akin to living in an oven. Children and elderly people are some of the most vulnerable, have scarce options for relief amidst 108 degree Fahrenheit heat. Meanwhile, China's just recorded its highest known temperature as the thermometer hit 126 degrees.